Welcome to Apple Pie Playground, where we serve up slices of healing for the heart. Stay tuned for a journey of transformation back to the divine inner child. Can you come out and play today?
Welcome, everybody, to Apple Pie Playground. I'm your host, Valerie. It's so wonderful to be back with you this week. Thank you so much, BBS Radio, for all you do for us. We are so very grateful. It is great to be back on the playground with you this week, everybody. And I have been thinking about the playground a lot this week, and I want to share just a few inclinations of my childhood in the playgrounds that we like to play on. And one of my very favorite places to play on a good playground is always going to be the merry-go-round. And I will tell you why. Military playgrounds, okay? Military playgrounds. It used to be military merry-go-rounds were heavy iron contraptions, okay, with big steel plates and huge center hubs. I mean, you can imagine what this merry-go-round would look like. It's like armored playground equipment is what it was. And we would get those things rolling. Oh my goodness, we defied that machine to throw us off. We did everything we could to get those merry-go-rounds up and running as fast as we could. And it was us against the machine. And I think about it now, and I ask myself about those experiences. And we just as kids, we were fairly fearless. We defied the machine, as it were, and we pushed fate because, you know, it was fun. And now I think about being a grown-up, right, on this ride called life, and we're thrown off every time we turn around now, and it's not really fun anymore, is it? And we wonder, well, okay, what... what happened, right? What got real? And I think about that. What got real? And I think about the kids in my old neighborhoods. And, oh, man, we would do some of the dumbest things. They were so, so dumb, but they were so, so fun. We would do things like hanging on the merry-go-round by our legs. We would cross our legs, right, and fly back and let our hands go and fly back and just spin around the merry-go-round at top speed. And it was, oh my goodness, it was just thrilling, right? You know, we would line kids around the merry-go-round, okay? We would stand them around the merry-go-round, and we would have them push us to maximum warp speed, okay? We were on the merry-go-round. Bunches of kids would stand on the outside and just push the hell out of that merry-go-round and get it going as fast as they could. A lot of them were teenagers, right, who loved to scare kids like us. And they would get that thing going, and then they would stand back, all of them, and we would start counting, right? All of us, and we would count to three, and one, two, three, and all of us would jump off as far as we could and land way out in the on the ground somewhere in every single direction. And we just did that every chance we got. We loved the adventure of it, right? Just beautiful. But, you know, we don't do that much anymore, do we? I mean, I don't know the last time I myself have actually been on a merry-go-round for a while. But I will tell you that there was one rule that kids did live by, as kids in the neighborhood, and at least army brats did, right? And we lived by the rules of knowing who to trust and how to trust, right? We grew up with fathers and mothers who had to learn who to trust and what happens when we abuse that trust. And kids grew up feeling these things and listening to family conversations over dinner and watching the behaviors of parents coming in from the field and training exercises and the things that they would talk about, right? And there was a knowing about being trustworthy and what it feels like and what it has to feel like, right? It was fairly heavy a thing. And I'm wondering how many of us feel that with God, right? That heaviness, the idea of trust and whether we have it or not, and when we have it, and how we have it, and what it feels like. And we'll talk about that today a little bit. But before we get too serious, right? Sometimes we do that. Let's do something we haven't done in a while. Let's play a little bit. You want to? We haven't used our notebooks in a while, so let's do that. All we need is something to write with and something to write on. Pen and paper, any old thing to write with, any old thing to write on. Some of us like to keep our notebooks out so that we can do our expressive art and our self therapy and some of our self reflection that we like to do and keep it in their notebook. But let's do some expressive play for a little bit. Right, like we like to do on Sunday afternoons together. Let's see what the inner child is up to today. You want to? So let's do an exercise called the blind men with the elephant. Right? Does it ring a bell? We know the story, right? It's an Indian parable about three blind men trying to describe an elephant. And they've never seen one. And each man finds a different part of the elephant and describes it as any number of things, right? Like a tree and a snake and a rope. And none of them recognize it as an elephant. They don't get the whole picture. They just sort of have to do the best they can where they are, trying to get a sense of what this large creature might be, then they have no sense of anything more than what their touch can let them find out. So let's give it a try. You want to? Let's have a little fun, right? Here are our instructions for this particular activity, the blind men and the elephant. So, get a piece of paper, and what we'll do is we will either fold the paper into four boxes. Okay, so we're going to fold the center of the paper and then fold it over again. And when we unfold it, we'll have four boxes there, right? Or we could draw a line through the middle of the page and then draw a line down the center of the page, right? So that we have four boxes that way. Super simple. And what we're going to do is we are going to draw a few parts of an elephant, right? Just do the best you can. We're having a little bit of fun. We're going to focus on our inner child. And so, what we will start with is in the upper left-hand box, let's draw an elephant ear. Okay, do the best you can to remember what an elephant ear looks like. And in the upper left-hand box, we're going to draw an elephant's ear. Okay, take a second. Let's draw an elephant's ear. Okay. And as we're drawing, let's make this ear a symbolic thing. Okay. Let's make it a symbol. Okay. For hearing. Let's make this elephant's ear symbolic for hearing. Okay, we'll use it as something of a metaphor in our activity. So, this ear represents a time in your life when you tried to tell someone something important and they didn't listen or they did not understand what you were telling them. Okay. Do you remember a time in your life when you tried to tell somebody something important and they didn't listen? You remember that time? Choose one of those experiences, and that's an experience we're going to work with today. Okay. So imagine the blind men are trying to figure out your ear. But you have to help them because they don't get it, okay? You have to help them understand your situation where you told somebody something important and they didn't listen to you. Okay, so here's how you can help the blind men see your view, right? Or understand your view. Make a brief note on your paper to answer this question for them. Okay. We're going to jot down a brief answer to this question. Okay. Here's the question. Why was it important for you to share information with somebody like you did? Why was it important for you to share information with somebody like you did when they chose not to listen? Why was it important for you to share? Just jot a brief answer on your paper where in the upper left-hand corner, you can use a list of words if you want to, or a phrase, or, write a sentence or two, and we will just answer that particular question before we move to our next box. Okay, got it? Okay, let's go to the next box. Okay, second picture. All right, draw your elephant's trunk. Draw your elephant's trunk. The nose, right? The nose, the trunk of your elephant. Fun fact, an elephant's trunk handles almost all the key functions of an elephant's survival. Did you know that? Yeah, it's true. So here's your question about your elephant's trunk. Okay, do the best you can to draw one. It's okay, it doesn't have to be perfect. Here's your question about your elephant's trunk. How did you handle it when your advice was ignored? When you tried to share important information and your advice was ignored, how did you handle it? Okay, jot down an answer, right? No judgment. We're just allowing our inner child to come out. Remember, our inner child is focused on the elephant. So there's really no effort at judgment here. Let's just answer that question with a few words or phrases. Right, and we are in the second picture, the second box on our paper. How did you handle it when your advice was ignored? Got it? Okay. Let's go to the third box on your paper. All right. In your third box, draw your elephant's leg. Draw your elephant's leg. What does an elephant's leg look like? Let's see if we can remember. Okay. Do you know that an elephant in the wild generally walks about 25 miles a day? It's true. Okay. Elephants can travel hundreds of miles in a week. As a matter of fact, elephants can walk as much as 16 hours a day. Okay. That's a lot of leg power. That's a lot of leg power. Now, in the incident that we're thinking about together, in this third picture, okay, when somebody didn't listen to you about a very important thing, and maybe they walked away, what course of action did you take? Okay. That's our third box, third question. What course of action did you take? What course of action did you follow? Jot down your answer, a few words, a phrase or two, answering that question. No judgment. We're focused on the elephant, right? So let's feel into this for a minute, okay? Can we talk for a minute about this? Really talk about some things for just a minute. In the incident we're focused on, okay, did we have advice to offer because we thought somebody lacked important information to make a good decision? Is that what we thought? Did we doubt that he or she would make the right decision or a good decision without our input? And is it possible that maybe did we lack trust in them and their behavior for some reason? And we knew we needed to restore our trust in them by getting them to behave in a certain way. Right? Is trust a thing here? Can we think about it for a second? In those three questions, is trust a thing here? So let's take a look at the last box. Okay, in the last box, we're going to draw an elephant's tail. Take a second and draw an elephant's tail. Okay. And this question is the proverbial elephant in the room, so to speak. Okay. So, question number four is the proverbial elephant in the room. All right. Here's your last question for box number four. Do you feel mistreated by the situation you were in, trying to help somebody who needed it but didn't value your input? Do you feel a little mistreated? So take a minute, jot down a few words about it, right? Do a little bit of reflection. And then I want to invite you to add one more note on your paper in that last box. Okay. Write this down too. Let's write down the phrase, I will be with you. Let's write that down. I will be with you. Okay, and we'll talk about that today, right? So, thank you so much for drawing an elephant with me. Thank you for letting your inner child out to play a little bit and being brave enough to reflect on something that might not necessarily have been very pleasant to remember. And re for reflecting on matters of the heart, it was so very brave of you. And sometimes it's good to allow ourselves to be brave and do a little reflection and have a little fun too, right? Without the judgment, without the judgment. So, wow, boy, oh boy, how many of us want to trust God so badly, the source of our being. But sometimes we just don't. And are we disappointed in what God does with our advice sometimes? And are we confused that our explicit instructions seem to be ignored by God? Right? We're showing him what we need in our lives. We're telling God exactly what it is that we're missing and what we need and what would make us happy and what's important. Right? And nobody knows us better than we know ourselves. Right? So doesn't a God who loves us answer those kinds of prayers? I mean, we're laying it out, all of it. We're laying it right on out. You know, is God picking up what we're laying down? I mean, that's the question. And do we have, you know, maybe trust issues about that? And I'm wondering if maybe we could go a little deeper here together, friends. Are we, you know, feeling safe enough to do that together, to go just a little deeper with that? Is it possible that some of the same struggles that blind men had discovering an elephant are the same struggles we have discovering the true nature of our source creator? I mean, do we rush in to advise God on our views because we just don't trust what we know or we think we know about God? Do we not trust not being in control? Right? Do we not trust what could happen to us and still require us to have faith? That's a scary thing when what we see unfolding doesn't feel a lot like the faith and trust that we're being told to have, right? And sometimes it's very uncomfortable. Sometimes it doesn't quite make sense. And do we express our interests and give our opinions so that we can avoid painful results in a chaotic world, right? At war with itself, right? The light and the dark that we're in, you know, we're standing here in the middle trying to live our lives. We go to the powerful source of all creation and we just lay down our worries and we offer all the solutions we can think of. And sometimes we see a very different unfolding, don't we? And maybe we don't see things going our way. And so do we give God our input and our expectations, and do we become like blind men trying to describe the elephant in the room, right? What elephant, right? And is it that we can't trust our journey when God doesn't seem to hear us? You know, who's pushing our merry-go-round ride anyway, right? We chose to get on. We had an exit plan to get off. We pushed together in a unified motion, right? And combined our energies to set in motion this ride we're on. And then, wait a second, something happened that wasn't so fun. Or something happened to, you know, make us fear the jump or the exit or the landing that we had planned before we got on and started moving around so quickly on this merry-go-round of life. And sometimes the ride feels good and sometimes it feels lousy and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. And we sit and think about it and roll it over in our minds, and so often our brains decide against the idea of God and trust and the power of source energy and the love that an unknown force, omnipotent and all-powerful, might actually have for us. And we discover that we may not even trust in a God. And there is a pattern involved in all that doubting, friends, if we look. We think these things are for a very specific reason. right? But we just don't know what they are. And somehow the thinking that we do doesn't give us an answer that we can justify in the experience of a good life. And so we're between trusting and watching our life go in a direction and wondering what the middle might be. And we know where the brain's involved, right? We can think ourselves into anything. So that's a problem in itself. It's like blind men trying to put all the misapplied pieces together to describe an elephant. And we're trying to put it all together, what we think God is, but we're just not sure. And we try to reason through an answer, but we can't sometimes. We can't often think past, the needs of an ego mind. It's afraid and cautious. It's mechanized to avoid pain and fight fear. And trying to find God in a brain guarded by an ego and consumed by fear-instigating chemicals, well, it makes us blind men, doesn't it? It's not the best way to go about things, is it? I mean, do we believe that we can think our way into a relationship with God? I mean, can we think our way into trusting God? Can we think our way into opening the energy centers in our bodies that align with the source resonance of a perfection eternally composed? I mean, like we would study a problem. Is that the way it works? It's like, can we think our way into loving somebody, anybody? I will love you and like it, right? I mean, can we do that? Are we any good at blind trust as a mental exercise? And when we think about it, how many trust falls have we hazarded into our lives, right? And how many trust falls have we failed when it comes to God and our expectations and the outcomes that unfold in our lives, even as we try as hard as we can, right? And we already know what it feels like not to be able to trust. I mean, we learned that from our elephant exercise, right? Probably each and every one of us came up with a very specific scenario that we worked with in our exercise today. We know trust has to be made of better things, but we may not know what those things are right now, right? We may not have much evidence of those things. And the thing is, Christ told us important and beautiful things that required deep trust to understand. And he said things like, the peace of God surpasses all understanding. But we can't get there, friends. We can't go where Christ wanted to take us if we reconnoiter our way out of the experience of the life we're living, right? Through the mind and through the brain and through the ego. This is an age where it is our time to remember God, right? To develop a knowing of God again. This is Aquarius, friends, our opportunity to pull ourselves back into the alignment of sacred things. And Christ said many, many times, you'll never know it by reading the Bible, but he said, don't try to think your way into the flow of your spirit. And he said that a lot. Don't try to think your way into the flow of your spirit. You have to feel your way. There's an energy. It has a resonance. It has a rhythm. It flows against your skin in a very specific way. And you can feel it, right? That feeling will never move through a brain. It will never move through a brain, friends. You have to feel your way. Like our example and the blind men, right? We don't have a perfect view of life. It's not complete. It's not spelled out. It's unfamiliar at times, and it's very, very uncertain. But as we feel our way, as we allow this energy that our heart space creates in a unified field that comes from the cosmos into our beingness, we can find peace in that. So that no matter what our elephant looks like, we can know it intimately, friends. We can know it. And our elephant will look different for every single one of us. It is the unfolding of life, and our life force energy is what we use to help us navigate the learning that we do, getting to know that shape and that form, and the texture and the feeling and the flow of the energy. Right? And essentially, we are all trying to piece together an elephant, the looks of which we've forgotten, right? And it tests our trust. Our good work is to bypass the trust issues of the brain, right? And to work with our energy so that it uses the body's flows through its core and balances all other parts, including the brain, right? We have to give in to the magic of breathing in God, right? Of awakening the flow in our bodies. We have to let go of knowing why. We have to let go of why. Why comes when it informs best. Let go of what is not in human time, friends. Right? We wrote the words that Christ used to instill trust in his followers. I am with you always. And trust was very, very important. He had to have it, and he had to teach it, and he had to create it in those who would follow him. It was so very important, so essential. Like all the stories that military children would sit and listen to, trust was essential. Right? Do you remember our fourth box? We wrote, I am with you always. Trusting in the why when we don't know the why. Right? That's knowing that Christ promised the inseparability of his source with ours. And can we trust that? Can we trust that? And so, what are we talking about when we say we're inseparable from God, right? Well, we hear a lot about it now. It's something that lots of folks are talking about. We are hearing lots of new information about ancient texts. And in ancient texts, we're hearing that the one source creator and the God of all things was unnameable. It was a life force, pure knowingness, pure energy, pure creation. And people didn't even try to give God a name, right? It was what it was. And in its evolution of self, a most beautiful thing happened. Friends, we became the I am that I am. We became children of the unspeakable sovereign of creation. We became children who didn't need identity or form or ego to navigate source energy. That is who we are. And then we forgot what we knew, right? Until Christ reminded us. And he spoke what was source's message and the message of a father to children. The I am that I am. You are that you are, and that is anything you wish it to be, friends. And we've forgotten, and the dark parts of us wish it so. But when we sit down and breathe and get quiet and call in our source, saying, "Tether me to you, Father," there is no separation anymore. There never was but in the mind. So calm the mind and be with God as the energy flowing through our body that animates our lives and our laughter and our love. And the rest is just a brain and its subterfuge. And we won't find trust there, friends. So I guess the question is, can the brain handle that kind of anomaly, the I am that I am? Well, can it? Then why are we constantly, for centuries upon centuries, trying to desperately define God and describe God and standardize God and fight wars over God and ritualize God and on and on and on? Why are we doing that to satisfy a brain who thinks about what this anomaly is, who has to know it and control it? The brain must know what is a finite idea. Because the ego must know what it fears, friends. Right? The ego must know if God is friend or foe so it can know how to manage the idea of God. Right? How to protect its interests in a relationship with God. It's a control mechanism. The mental understanding of a God, it is the limitations of viewpoints on a limitless experience. That is what our brain is trying to do. Right? With this eternal expression, this nameless power that is the father of all of the children of Spark that we are part of, but we just don't remember. And when we don't trust, friends, is that what's happening? And we think God is a rationale, a set of premises that lead one from another if we can prove them all, right? It's kind of funny how we all sit around and argue over what God is, and pretty soon words become more important than the energy behind those words, right? Because proof is a matter of the mind. We build a lexicon of ideas around God, right? Rather than a storehouse of energy. It's kind of strange, isn't it? I mean, we begin to survive life rather than live it through a mind who has to identify God as a rationale and a set of premises, right? And we're out of control if we can't do that. And many of us come to see God as a metaphor or an enemy or as not existing at all. Because of what the brain tries to do, right? Or the brain sees God as the indescribable parts of an unknowable elephant. And what does the brain do with that but throw it away because it can't trust what it cannot finitely express as a whole? As a whole idea. But Christ did something very different when he took us out of the brain and into the heart. He did something very, very different. He described God in a very simple way as the light that is over all things. From me all has come forth, and to me all has reached. That's how simple God is, friends. That's how extraordinarily simple this very complex idea truly, truly is. And we try really hard to know and love a complicated, complex God, and we manifest and meditate and discern and read the signs. And what's wrong? That we can't form an instant access experience after all that good mental work, right? What's wrong with us? What's wrong with the premise of God? What's wrong with the relationship? What's wrong with the situation? Well, there is another view, friends. And Christ has been recorded to have said, know what's in front of your face, and what's hidden from you will be revealed to you. And if you bring forth what is within you, what you have will save you. And we can ask ourselves, what on earth does that mean? And there are lots of folks with very different ideas, and some are close and some are not very close, and everyone is trying very hard to do their best to understand exactly what it is being talked about in those words. And perhaps there are a number of messages that we can refer to. And essentially, what's being said is trust yourself. Know yourself. Trust yourself and stand in your own knowing. Trust yourself, friends. If you trust your body and your breath and the still, quiet moments that speak to you, you will know yourself. You won't wonder about trusting a distant God, or trusting what other people say, or trusting what a minister says, or trusting the situation, or trusting the information. Right? Those things will fall away because you are your own practice of understanding and knowing. Does that make sense? There is nothing hidden from you any longer if you use what is within you to decide what is trustworthy. Does that make sense? And what that looks like is God begins to run through you, to pulse through your heart space and energize the field around you with energies that come from you. And God comes through you from the inside as you go within and trust what you find there. And then you do the good work of radiating outward all that is God. And we might ask, well, okay, how do we do that? Well, we can start at the place that we started when we were born, right? We were born into this human experience, and what's the first thing we did? We can breathe, friends. We can breathe. And as a matter of fact, there is a breath worker, and his name is Andrew Genovese, and I watched a video of a presentation that he gave about breath work, and he did the most wonderful thing. He actually recommends that we call breath work breath play instead. Breath play instead. And I love that idea so much because, you know, breathing is autonomic. We do it whether we want to or not. But for some reason, when we have to do it, or we know we should do it and we should do it consciously, we don't want to do it. We don't want to do this thing that our body already does, because somehow we have to put effort into it. And it's kind of funny, you know, the way he talks about that, and it makes a lot of sense. And so we can call it breath play, and maybe it's a little easier to want to do a little bit of breath play, as self-care for our body, as a way of energizing ourselves and going within to awaken the energy fields and the flows in our body. And so why don't we do a little bit of breath play? You want to? We've never done this before. But I think it could be super fun. And, you know, we could stay with our elephant, right? You're remembering our elephant. And we could remember the trunk that we drew, right? How long was the trunk that you drew on your paper? How long was the trunk that you drew? If it were on a real elephant, how long do you think it would be? If you had to measure it in feet, how long do you think it would be? Would it surprise you to know that an African elephant's trunk is actually around 7 feet long? 7 feet long. And when you think about it, that's taller than almost all of us listening right now. Right? When you think about it, that's a big trunk. And that's a pretty long breath, right? To get through 7 long feet of an elephant's trunk, right? From trunk to lungs. But did you know that an elephant's lungs are connected directly to its diaphragm? And it uses very powerful chest muscles that are connected to the lungs and the diaphragm. It's all connected together to give the elephant the capacity for powerful inhales and exhales. And that makes sense, right? That makes sense. And so essentially, the elephant is breathing into its diaphragm, right? And so those of us who maybe play an instrument or sing in a choir or maybe yell at our kids a lot, we pretty much know when we breathe in, right, that we're not really trying to fill our lungs. What we're trying to do is fill our diaphragms, right? And it feels kind of like we're breathing into our stomachs, doesn't it? When we breathe in and we fill our diaphragms and we notice that our stomachs are sticking out, our diaphragms are sticking out a little bit, and we know that we have a good breath in there that will do the job of a good song or, a good line of music. So what do you say? We take a few breaths together and we breathe in to really feel what it feels like to awaken our energy pathways in our bodies, because that is what we're doing. We are creating the vibration of those energetic pathways. We are getting into the motion of the energy, awakening the energy, and moving it through the pathways of our body. Why don't we do that with deep elephant breaths? I mean, that's great breath play, right? Does that sound fun? Because I'm up for it. I think maybe we could try it. So every time we breathe, okay, we breathe in a controlled manner that slows down the autonomic functions. Okay, when we breathe in a controlled way, we control our breaths. We are slowing down the autonomic functions of our body. And our body sort of says, hey, we're going to pay attention to this. What's happening? Right? And then we put our body to work creating energy that flows through our core. And you remember we talk a lot about this. We know that our heart space regulates the energy flow up and down the spine and through the nervous system, right? And through the other flow pathways of the body. And that awakens energy in the body, right? So maybe we could give it a try, maybe like an elephant would do. You want to? So let's think about this. We have 7 feet of trunk that to breathe through. Okay. Are we imagining now that we are elephants? We have 7 feet of trunk to breathe through, right? And we're breathing all of that into our diaphragms down where our stomach is, right? And we can have a little bit of fun with this. Maybe let's do 3 elephant breaths. Okay, we'll breathe in through our trunks, which is our nose, right? and send our air down to our stomachs so our diaphragm stick out a little bit, okay? And we'll breathe into our stomachs, okay? Watch your diaphragm push out if you want to, and it might be kind of interesting to get a nice full breath into the body. And after all, we are elephants, right? We can do this. Once we fill our diaphragm, we'll hold it for a count, and then we will gently breathe out, right? And we're going to do this at our own pace. We are, after all, our own elephants, and we know what's right for us individually, right? So we can do this at our own pace. So let's give it a try. You want to? All right, so here we go. We're going to breathe in through the trunk like an elephant, getting breath down into the diaphragm. We're breathing in, right? See your diaphragm pushing out. Hold it for a count. And now breathe back out through the trunk. And some of us have learned to breathe out through our mouths, and that's okay too. We can do that as well. Let's breathe in a second time. Breathe through the trunk. In like an elephant, right? Watch your diaphragm. Hold it for a count. And now breathe it back out through our trunks again. Want to do it one more time? Breathe in through the trunk, the long, long trunk like an elephant. Watch your diaphragm. Hold it for a count. And now breathe it back out through the trunk. What do you think, elephants? How did that feel? We have just activated our energy centers. We are energetically connected right now. Feels good, doesn't it? God is a breath away, friends. That's all. That's all. All that's sacred happens within us, friends. And it starts with a good breath or two or three. And it starts with a way that's very simple, right? We can always trust conscious breathing. If we can't trust anything else, we can sit down and trust our conscious breathing. We are flowing, and we are as God in our flow when we do that, friends. And I hope you had as much fun as I did breathing like an elephant. I thought that was kind of cool. And maybe there's somebody in your home or in your classroom or in your Sunday school or in your family that you might want to sit down and breathe like an elephant with. And it's a great way to have some fun and learn how to connect with their spirit and to energize our bodies, right? We have just enough time left to end our hour together with a Dixit card. So you want to do a Dixit card? A Dixit card is where we use a scene that I describe, and we form a scene in our imagination, okay? And we fill it with topics that bring up subconscious ideas that we can observe and reflect on. And the idea is that much of what is our memory, particularly with respect to trauma and to conflict, is stored in subconscious suitcases, we like to call it, in our brains. And sometimes we just like to take a little peek in and see what our brain's working on and maybe see what's there that might pop out for us to do a little self-reflection on. So Dixit cards are pretty cool that way. And so today, maybe let's get our notebooks back out and we can create our scene together, right? And I think maybe let's stay with our blind men and the elephant theme today. You want to? Because there is actually an actual Dixit card scene that we can use. Okay? So let's get ourselves ready to imagine the scene in our minds, and we're just going to allow whatever comes in to be there, and we are going to watch the thoughts that come through and reflect on those thoughts and allow those to move through and see what happens. So here is the Dixit card. Okay. It's a real Dixit card. Let's imagine a very large spider's web. Okay. A large spider's web. And in the web is an elephant. There is an elephant in the spider's web, caught inside the spider's web. Okay. Do you see that? Do you see that as the scene is coming into focus? Now, the web looks a little too fragile to hold the elephant, but the elephant is not escaping. So we have a scene in our minds. There's a large spider's web, and the web is an el in the web is an elephant. Okay? But the elephant is not trying to escape. Okay, do we have the scene in our minds? Now, we don't know where the elephant is or how the elephant got there, but it's covered in spider's web. Okay, do you have the scene? Okay, let's ask some questions. Feel free to write some answers in your notebook, or you can just think about it. Allow whatever comes to mind to flow in, and then we can do some self-reflection. Okay, question number one about our elephant in the spider's web. Question number one, what is the expression on the elephant's face? What is the expression on the elephant's face in the scene in your mind? And you can jot down your answer if you want to. Make a few notes in your notebook. What is the expression on the elephant's face as the elephant is in this spider's web? Question number two. Is the elephant worried? Or afraid, or mad? Or is there another emotion that you can identify that the elephant might be feeling? Is there an emotion that you can identify that the elephant might be feeling? Think about it. What does the scene look like? Question number three. Is the elephant trying to get out of the spider's web? Is it trying to get out of the spider's web? Think about that as your scene develops. Is the elephant trying to get out? And ask yourselves why or why not? Why or why not might the elephant be trying to get out of the web or not trying to get out? Why or why not? And we may not be sure, but what might be coming to mind that we can record with a few notes? And number four, what do you think the spider looks like that made that web? Describe the spider. What do you think the spider looks like that made that web? Describe the spider. Color, size, demeanor. Describe the spider. Jot it down and make a few notes. Got it? What does the spider look like? Number five. If a spider symbolizes something for you, what would it be? What would it symbolize? If a spider symbolizes something for you, what would it symbolize? And maybe you've never thought about it, but what might you have coming to mind right now, given this particular scene in our Dixit card? What might the spider symbolize for you right now? Number six. What might the spider symbolize for the elephant? What might the spider symbolize for the elephant? And just write down what might come to you and what you think might be the case. What might it symbolize for the elephant? And number seven, what does the elephant represent in the scene? Right? What's the first thing that comes to your mind? What might the elephant represent in this Dixit card if we had to think of this elephant as representation of something or metaphorical or an analogy of some sort? What comes to mind that might represent this elephant? And number eight, last question. Last question. How does this situation in the scene in your mind resolve itself? How does the scene, the situation in your mind, how does it resolve itself when you think about it? What happens in the scene when you think about it? The first thing that might come up? How does it resolve itself? And you can jot down a few notes if you want to. So let's think about this. Was there anything familiar for you that came up as you imagined the scene? Anything familiar that came up for you with respect to the spider's web or the elephant or the behavior? And that might be something that you might want to reflect a little more on. So, did the exercise give you something that you'd like to think about a little bit more? Maybe through the questions or the answers that you jotted down? Did the exercise give you something that maybe you want to reflect on a little bit and think a little bit more about? And remember, we're simply observing things that come out of the subconscious suitcases in our brains, right? As we think about abstract ideas like these, that's what we're doing. And we're allowing this free flow of ideas so that we can sort of capture what might be coming out of the subconscious, right? And we just allow these ideas, and that gives us a chance to see them and to maybe do a little bit of self-reflection and application that might be appropriate in their own lives, right? And I guess a question might be, did the scene bring up something unexpected as a thought or an idea that maybe you didn't anticipate, right? And that might be worth observing too, right? How that unexpected thing is potentially relevant to you in some way. So it was a very peculiar picture this week, wasn't it? A true Dixit card. Very, very interesting. They get fairly strange. They can get fairly strange. Very, very interesting. Lots of opportunity to allow the subconscious to kind of come through with those Dixit cards. And so, friends, I just want to say thank you so much for doing a Dixit card with me this week. I think we had a chance together to do some really creative things, and I'm so happy about that. I hope that you were feeling pretty good about how creative you were able to be with me today, and I hope it was fun and interesting and maybe things that you can share with folks you love, and maybe there was something compelling and something we shared, and maybe something happy and something we shared, something we learned together. That would also be a wonderful end to a wonderful hour together. But now, friends, it is time for me to go home. And I sure did enjoy being with you this week. I really missed you last week, and I can't wait to be back again next Sunday. I really enjoyed our play today and our time together talking about things that maybe weren't so easy to talk about, but I'm so glad we did. And I just want to leave you with the idea that you can always trust yourself, friends, when you breathe and know that your power is within you and the energy that source offers you comes straight in into your body through the inside. And you can trust yourself this week with some breath play, right? Be an elephant for a little while every day, see what happens, maybe. And also, please be gentle with your heart space, friends. As always, be gentle with your heart space. It is the beautiful place, the residence of our source, as you know, as the inside moves us into a shared field and our conscious awareness can grow that space that allows source to reside within us. It's a beautiful place. We must offer it care as always, for sure. And I want to thank you so much, BBS, for your wonderful support. We love you, BBS. And so, friends, until next time.
Time to head home, friends. Thanks for being a part of today's journey. We'll see you back on the playground next Sunday at 1 p.m. Central Time on bbsradio.com. Make sure to subscribe if you enjoyed the show. Find us on Telegram and X to share your insights on topics today. Your input heals the child in us all.